Good morning and welcome to Acromegaly Update for Monday, August 10th. Today we've got two segments for you. First, a look at what's new in acromegaly research, and then we'll zoom out to the wider rare disease industry, where there was a lot more happening this week. Let's start with the research. I'll be honest with you up front, it was a quiet week for acromegaly specifically. There were no big trial results in the top medical journals this time around. So we broadened our search a bit to catch what mid-tier endocrinology journals and case reports had to offer. And there was actually some interesting stuff in there. The one that caught my eye most was a paper in the journal Endocrinology describing a brand new drug candidate called MAR-002. Quick refresher, pegvisomant is currently the only approved drug that blocks the growth hormone receptor directly, and it's a mainstay for patients who don't respond well to first-line treatments. The catch is that it needs to be injected every single day, which is a real burden for a lot of people. This new compound is a monoclonal antibody engineered to have a much longer half-life, meaning it could potentially be dosed far less often. Researchers made it by immunizing mice with the human growth hormone receptor and then testing how well the resulting antibody could block it. This is still early, preclinical work, there's no human data yet, but it's a promising sign that the field is actively trying to solve the convenience problem with hormone receptor blockade. Next, a review in endocrine-related cancer took stock of what we know about the genetic mutations behind pituitary tumors. For the growth hormone-secreting tumors that cause acromegaly, the authors point to a gene called GNAS as the most common culprit. It's not new data exactly, more of a state-of-the-field summary, but it's a good reminder of how much of the molecular biology behind these tumors is now mapped out, which matters because it opens the door to more targeted treatments down the road. There was also a lab study looking at why some of these pituitary tumors become invasive and harder to treat. Researchers found that immune cells called macrophages, which show up inside these tumors, secrete a protein called cathepsin Z that seems to help tumor cells push into surrounding tissue. It's basic science and won't change how anyone's treated today, but it's a candidate marker and maybe eventually a drug target for the more aggressive treatment-resistant cases. On the clinical side, there was a nice review connecting acromegaly to fatty liver disease, which doctors now call metabolic dysfunction-associated steatotic liver disease, or MESLD for short. Interestingly, growth hormone excess can actually be somewhat protective against liver fat buildup in some patients, working directly on liver cells. But once you factor in the insulin resistance that often comes along with acromegaly, the overall picture gets complicated. The takeaway from the authors is that clinicians managing acromegaly should really be thinking about liver health as part of the whole metabolic picture, not as a separate box to check. And finally, a case report out of JC. Case reports described a 56-year-old man whose heart failure from acromegaly didn't fully go away even after his hormone levels were brought under control with a somatostatin analog. He went on to develop an acute heart failure episode tied to an electrical conduction problem in his heart, and doctors treated him successfully with a defibrillator device that also helps resynchronize the heart's rhythm. It's just one patient, but it's a useful reminder that acromegaly-related heart damage sometimes needs its own device-based treatment on top of, not instead of, getting the hormones under control. So that's research. Now, zooming out from acromegaly to the wider rare disease industry, where things were considerably busier this week. The biggest trial news came from Silence Therapeutics, which reported strong phase 2 results for its drug divesiran in polycythemia vera, a rare blood cancer where the body overproduces red blood cells, raising the risk of dangerous blood clots. In a 48-person trial, 88% of patients who got the drug every 6 or 12 weeks had a clinical response, compared to just 19% on placebo. What makes this notable is that it sets Silence up to compete with Takeda, which has its own drug for the same disease, called rusfertide, further along in the approval process. Silence is betting that strong data and a more convenient dosing schedule can still win a fight against a rival that got there first. On the deal-making side, Tarsus Pharmaceuticals agreed to acquire a startup called Alkeus Pharmaceuticals for up to $800 million. Alkeus was founded by Josh Boger, a former Vertex executive, and its lead program is a late-stage therapy for Stargardt disease, an inherited eye condition that causes progressive vision loss, often starting in childhood, and currently has no approved treatment. It's another sign that even in a tighter funding environment, acquirers are still willing to pay real money for late-stage assets in ultra-rare diseases with no existing options. There was also an interesting safety update from Intellia Therapeutics, the CRISPR gene editing company. You may remember that one of Intellia's trials for transthyretin amyloidosis was put on hold last year after a patient developed serious liver injury and died. This week, Intellia said that after analyzing nearly 600 patient samples, they found that people carrying a specific genetic marker had by far the biggest liver enzyme spikes after treatment. That doesn't resolve the safety question entirely, but it gives the company a possible way to screen for higher-risk patients going forward, which matters a lot for the whole field of gene editing, where liver toxicity has been one of the biggest worries. And finally, a policy story out of Washington that's worth knowing about, even if it's not a single company's news. Biotech companies are lobbying the Trump administration to keep rare disease drugs out of two new Medicare pricing pilot programs aimed at bringing U.S. drug prices closer to what other wealthy countries pay. A new analysis from a Harvard researcher found that if you exempt rare disease drugs from those pilots, you wipe out most of the projected savings because orphan drugs make up an outsized share of Medicare spending relative to how many patients actually take them. However, this fight gets resolved will set a precedent that touches basically every company with a rare disease drug covered by Medicare, including, eventually, acromegaly treatments. That's the rundown for this week. Nothing tied the two segments together in a direct way this time, but there's a common thread worth sitting with. Real scientific progress, whether it's a new receptor antagonist or a genetic safety marker, still has to make its way through a slower and often harder fight over cost and access before it reaches patients. We'll keep tracking both sides of that story. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.